Isn't this where Ro usually says, "Hey, you people!" Doesn't he start screaming right away?
You nailed it, Bob.
Yeah, pretty spot on.
So I'm walking through the lobby. I had lunch with somebody, and then a security guard starts screaming, "Is there a broadcaster in the house? Is there a broadcaster in the house? Ro Khan is not here." And so I raised my hand, and they just escorted me up here.
Great timing. Just happened to be walking through when Ro was off. Great.
Well, you know, that's how it works in life. Sometimes you get a break. It's me, Bob Surratt. Good to be with you this afternoon. You know, they told me that Ro has the day off, and I thought at least Anna would show up. You know, and we worked together at Channel 5 for a few years, and I thought she liked me, but apparently she decided to stay away as well today. I'll try not to take that personally. Coming up this afternoon, in addition to yours truly trying to figure out how this works, we will be getting a little bit more on the weather, which is, you know, it's ridiculous out there. Demetrius Ivey will be joining us momentarily here. We have some tickets to give away to that big brew fest in New Buffalo. We'll be talking about the marathon. At least the weather for the marathon will be good. It's supposed to be cool but dry on Sunday. And I have some questions about whether it's really good for you to run a marathon and what the best method of training is and what you should eat, all of that. And this is going to be fun. Do you have some sports memorabilia at home that you don't know if you should part with it or not? You don't know if it's trash or a treasure? Well, we got a guy coming in here who knows the value of all sorts of things, baseball cards, autographed pictures, and he'll talk about that, and then we'll let you call in with whatever item you want to know about. And our man will tell us whether you have some trash or treasure. So that's also coming up. That'll be in our 4 o'clock hour today. We will have the Canarble wagon, of course. That's in Ro's contract. There must be a Canarble wagon, whether he's here or not. So we'll get to that later on today. And Rich Roper will be here to talk about, among other things, the new Breaking Bad movie, which I was just reading about, which sounds pretty interesting. And I did bring in my record collection. And I've got an interesting song here that you know, but a story about it that you may not know. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. Let's, so should we check in with everybody first on the staff, see if everybody's still here? Kevin's looking at sports today.
I'm here, Bob.
And I have a question for you about the Cubs managerial job opening, Kevin.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. And I think I know the answer to this already, but I'll tell you anyway what I was thinking. Rick Renteria, did he have a nightmare when Madden got ousted? Did he think, not again, this can't possibly happen again, can it?
Well, I think that idea ran through the thoughts of just about every Chicago sports fan was, man, is this guy really going to be the brutal part of a rebuild, the early parts of the rebuild, which are the worst when you lose a whole lot of games, and then you start to kind of trend in the upward direction, and then he got axed and Madden came in. So it kind of, you thought about that for sure when Madden was let go, but I think his job is safe.
Ross is the favorite?
I think so. And to me, he makes the most sense. He fits into the clubhouse. He fits into the culture. He obviously knows all the players. He's respected by them. But he also was sort of the guy that would chew out his teammates during a game if they didn't run out a particular play or made a mistake defensively. So I think he has the obvious easy transition into the Cubs clubhouse, and also kind of exactly what they're looking for, where I'm not saying Madden was loose on these guys or easy on them, but Madden was always Mr. Positive, Mr. Optimism. Everybody's always going to figure it out and get better and we'll be just fine. So maybe Ross kind of kicks him in the butt a little bit and gets him going.
One would think that a Joe Girardi type tough guy would be what that team needs at this point in their development.
Yeah, it always seems that if it's a coach or a manager, they get let go, that the opposite sort of personality gets brought in. You know what I mean? If it's a fiery football coach, the next guy's the mild-mannered, soft-spoken coach. It always just seems to be that trend in all of the sports, really. So Girardi would sort of be the opposite of a Joe Madden. He has a ton of experience, obviously, some roots to the area. He interviewed for the gig a couple days ago, so he's definitely in contention.
And I guess they don't like to make these announcements until the World Series is over, right? Doesn't Major League Baseball say if you're going to hire a new manager, wait till the postseason ends?
Yeah, most of the big moves, the big news happens after the playoffs. But this news is out there. I don't know if that necessarily pertains to a managerial position because it is so important. And, you know, with if it's trades or something like that, obviously it's going to come after the postseason. That's why they wait to announce all the awards and stuff after. So I don't know exactly when they would announce it, but I don't think they would wait until after the postseason. I think we might get this announcement sooner than later.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Who's your favorite, Bob? Who would you like to see the Cubs hire?
You know what? I do like Ross, but I have because I've met Girardi a couple of times. I'm in favor of that move simply because that might mean I'd get some tickets once in a while.
I think you get tickets either way.
Because I'm selfish. You know how that goes.
I got you.
It's 3:15, and I think it's been a good afternoon's work for me, so I'll see you again next time. Oh, there's more. All right, I forgot. We're going to get to the weather story in just a second here. Are we ready for a Demetrius yet? Not yet. Okay. Then we won't get to him just yet. And I want to point out something about the record collection I brought in. Now, I do have some vinyl albums, but I have too many CDs. I have way more CDs than vinyl. And I'm hoping at some point today somebody can help me with this because I don't know what to do with the CDs. I've got to get rid of most of them. It take up too much space, but I like to take some in the car every once in a while and listen to them. So what do I do? I mean, do people sell those things on eBay? I know there's some stores around, some used bookstores and record stores that probably buy them, but not for much. So maybe somebody will be able to help me with that later on today. Okay. This hour, you will have a chance to win a pair of tickets to Silver Creek Rockin' Brewfest, Sunday, October 27th from 3 to 7. From 3 to 7 Eastern? Is that what this means? Okay, well, is the Roll Con show now a network show? Why don't we just say from 2 to 6? Enjoy over 20 local breweries and live music for Belton John and Tom Petty tribute bands. Get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Rockin' Brewfest, October 27th, Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Oh, because it's in Michigan.
Buffalo. Mm-hmm.
That explains it. Okay. Time change here. When does that happen? Is that 2 weeks? Or we move the clocks back an hour?
Oh man, worst. I was hoping we already did.
The worst. It's dark at like 5 o'clock.
No.
You know, when I'm president, what I'm going to do is I'm going, and I think I could get this passed through the Senate and Congress, every Friday at about this time, we'll move the clocks back an hour. So everybody will get an extra hour for their weekend.
Ooh.
Now, somebody once told me, though, if you did this after a few months, something would be wrong with the solar system. But I think it would be worth a try, don't you?
I am all for it.
You have my vote.
Yeah, all right. There you go. Monday is talking about a long weekend. Now, Monday's Columbus Day, and that means that there's no mail. The banks are closed. Is that right on Monday?
Doesn't garbage get messed up, garbage pickup?
I don't know. I forgot. I forgot it was Columbus Day Monday, but I was just thinking may have to take care of some business here today because things will be closed on Monday. And by Monday, I think it's going to be winter in Chicago. The weather for, as I mentioned, for the marathon on Sunday, partly cloudy with a high of 54, a low of 38, and no chance of rain. Winds 15 to 25 from the west-southwest. Ideal conditions for runners. So that'll be good to know. And again, I'm not so sure I buy into marathon running. And we'll get into this a little bit later on with an expert, as opposed to me, an athletic trainer, who actually is going to be running his first marathon this Sunday. So we'll get to him. And I see Demetrius on the little TV screen here. That means I got to press this button over here, I believe. And if all goes well, he'll say hi to us right now.
All right, all's going well.
Oh, there you go. We're on CLTV between now and 4 o'clock, and nothing against CLTV there, Demetrius, but used to be in radio. One of the great things about it was you didn't have to shave, didn't have to shower, barely had to get dressed. Not true anymore.
No, not true anymore. Ro is now a fashion icon because of this.
Is that right?
Because of these changes. part of the Razor Club. I'm sure he's doing pretty well. It's an honor to work with you for the first time.
No, now you're delirious. You've been drinking over there at CLTV.
That's what we do at GN.
Talking about changes, it was warm this morning, and then it started to rain, and then it got a little cooler. And what are we in for now this evening?
Well, we're in for more cool. How about this? We're seeing rain showers now. It's not going to rain all night. That's good news. I think we begin to dry out from west to east, probably around kickoff of those high school games. So, you know, you're talking 7 p.m. or so. For the viewers watching on CLTV, I'm showing the radar, and what it shows is that we begin to dry out. Now, the high temperatures today, as you mentioned, upper 60s, even a couple low 70s across the region, but now we're already continuing to drop down into those 50s and 40s, and by late tonight, we'll see lows down into the mid-30s with a freeze warning issued by the National Weather Service for counties west of Cook County, kind of away from the lake, including Kendall, Kane, DeKalb, in McHenry County. So you're looking at temperatures that are going to drop to around freezing, and in some areas a little bit below, probably 31, 32 in some areas out west. So it's going to get cold tonight.
Falling temperatures, falling people. Any more rain, Demetrius?
I got rain for the next few hours, and then I think we're going to have that kind of drizzly, sprinkly stuff. Is it raining? Is it not? Probably until about 10 p.m. or so, but then after that, I think we dry out. The thing is, Bob, as we clear out, that's going to help us cool down. So we're going to see temperatures drop quickly, I think, during the overnight, probably from the 40s into the 30s late tonight.
That's how we roll around here.
That
Demetrius Ivory, WGN-TV meteorologist. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. I'll see you for your first marathon next year.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you just wait for me. I'll be there. Let's get the traffic check here and find out how it looks. Normal Friday rush, Lauren? Bob Surratt in charge of the Ro Khan Anna DeVlantis show, one day only. Thanks for being with us. One of the great things about Chicago, and I think this is really the DNA, the fabric of our community that makes it so great around here, the neighborhood businesses, the independent businesses, the mom and pop businesses. And one thing you hate is when you hear about an institution that's closing up after decades. And that's what's happening on the South Side. A bakery is closing after being around about 47 years. And this is legendary. And I have to say that I'm sorry I never made it over to 2907 South Archer, because after October 31st, their history. Closing at the end of the month, the Bridgeport Bakery, known for at least 47 years for maple bacon donuts, wedding cakes, punchkis, and a lot more. The ownership just announced yesterday that they're closing. The owner is retiring, Ron Pavelka. And according to most people, they've been around 47 years. But actually, the Tribune reports they've been open for 78 years because they went through an ownership change. But the bakery's actually been there for almost 80 years at 2907 South Archer. So if you're in the neighborhood, get over there and get your last batch of goodies from the Bridgeport Bakery before they close. Now, you know what happens all the time to businesses like this when they announce they're closing. The lines form. You can't get in. And it reminds me that if I ever open up a restaurant, and I may be dumb, but I'm not that dumb. I don't want to get in that business. But if I ever did, I would do two things to ensure that my restaurant would be successful. First of all, I would announce that we're closing. As soon as we open up, I'd say, well, unfortunately, we're going out of business. And so people, I think, would then come in there.
Open for 1 week only.
Well, actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, I'd have to stay open for like maybe a year anyway. And then I'd announce the closing to get people to come in because that's what people do. They find out about, for example, this bakery on the South Side in Bridgeport closing. Well, you know, they'll make it a point to get over there. The other thing I would do, I would hire some kids, pay him a little bit to just stand in line outside my restaurant. So whenever you went by the restaurant, there would always be people in line. And that attracts people, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of places actually probably do that. They won't admit it. So it's
you think so?
Tactic.
Really?
Yeah. I remember learning about this idea in school of how even if you have like a bowl of money, if it's a stand outside, people think that your product is good because people have paid for it. It's all psychology.
Lauren, have you opened a restaurant recently?
No. I could maybe help with some ideas, but yeah. Too much competition around here in Chicago.
Yeah, I think the average lifespan of a restaurant is, well, let's put it this way. I think if a restaurant is open 3 years, they're really doing something. And as I mentioned, one of the great things about Chicago, not just the restaurant business, other businesses too, but especially in the restaurant business, you love these places that have been around for decades, you know, the Gene and Giorgetti's type places, and there's a whole list of them. Now I mentioned that, I'm going to have to list the other ones too, right? You know who they are, don't you? You know, they're your favorites, right? My wife makes fun of me because she claims that I don't want to go to hip new restaurants. I only want to go to a restaurant that's been around for decades.
I shed a tear when Sabatino's closed last year.
Yeah, see what I mean?
It's the memories.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's
family
the Berghoffs and you know, going way back, the Fritzels, and there's a long list of them. But there are many that are still with us, and you want to patronize those places. So, again, a salute to the Bridgeport Bakery for serving the South Side for so many years, closing on October 31. Let's get to the news, find out what's happening. What's the latest, Kim? That music can mean only one thing if you're a regular around here on the Rokan Show. Lauren has her list of things to do, see, and avoid.
That I do.
And before you start, Lauren, let me thank everyone for reminding me about the other old restaurants that are surviving in Chicago. Didn't mean to leave anybody out. I knew this would happen once I mentioned one or two. The Green Door Tavern, still around. Lou Mitchell's, Lindy's Chili, Italian Village, and then we could go on until 7 o'clock with just the list. But again, my point that one of the great things about this city, you have these old businesses, these independent operators, these mom-and-pop places that continue to survive, and we want them to go on forever, unlike the Bridgeport Bakery that's closing, unfortunately, at the end of the month. But I guess the owner has had enough, and it's not like they're going out of business because of problems, and they just want to take it easy, and I think they deserve it after 78 years. Don't you think so, Lauren?
Absolutely.
Well, it's happening this weekend, and it's a long weekend for a lot of people with the Monday Columbus Day holiday.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing going on this weekend, it would be hard to avoid if you didn't already know, but the Chicago Marathon is Sunday. But not only that, there's a health and fitness expo attached to this all weekend. So that's already been going on at the McCormick Place over in the North Hall. So people can go and pick up their race packets there and everything, kind of just learn about health and fitness, some of the latest in footwear for running or apparel, nutrition, technology, all that good stuff. There's also a 5K tomorrow, but obviously the big race, the marathon, is Sunday. And the first wave of people kicks off around 7:30. That will be some of the more handicapped people that are getting off to an early start. And the last wave leaves around 8:30. So that's all day. Of course, a lot of closures for that. There's already been a lot around Grant Park, including parts of Congress Parkway, a.k.a. Ida B. Wells, Balboa, Jackson, and Columbus, but it'll be even more on Sunday. So pretty much, I wouldn't even want to drive in the city on Sunday if I were you.
Good idea.
Yeah, that's going to go till at least 4 o'clock. There's even a post-race party. So good luck to everyone who is running. They definitely deserve all this space in the city for doing such an amazing thing. But yes, definitely want to be aware of that this weekend. Go ahead. Oop, did I lose you? I can't hear him.
Whoops, there we go.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, sorry about that. I did ask people.
Uh-oh, we're losing Bob.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
cutting in and out, isn't it?
It is cutting in and out.
Classic technical difficulty.
Yeah, let the record show. See my hands up in the air? It's not me. Okay, I think it's working right now. I asked the people in charge here what I needed to know about the studio, how the technical operation works, and they said, don't worry, we'll get you in here to show you how everything works. Guess what? They're showing me now.
Oh, no.
They're showing me now. It is. Yeah, it's cutting in and out. Somebody call Allied Radio on Western Avenue and get somebody out here to fix this. Anyway, I meant to say to you before I was rudely interrupted by a technical problem that I enjoy watching the marathon on TV. And I get my running shoes on. I have a bowl of pasta. And it's a fabulous thing for the city of Chicago. What else is going on this weekend?
Well, so if you're a big fan of all things comics or superheroes, the Ace Comic Con Midwest is over at Rosemont Convention Center this weekend. So a lot of big celebrity guests are going to be there, such as Brie Larson, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Holland, Jake Gyllenhaal, Kit Harington, Taron Egerton. I could go on and on. But those are a lot of people that have been in Game of Thrones, in a lot of the Marvel movies as of late. It will kick off at 4 today, goes till 9, and then tomorrow 10 to 7, Sunday 10 to 5. But again, all things superheroes, comic creators, panel programming, a kid zone, 150 vendors. You do have to pay for tickets there, and those vary, so you want to check out the website for that. But another fun thing to do for one of the first very cold weekends in the area.
Yeah, and oftentimes the people who attend those conventions are as interesting as the headliners.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of very unique costumes usually at those things.
Now, this is a time of year where everything has pumpkin in it, and being one of the few people who doesn't like pumpkin spice and so forth and so on, I'm left out here. But I'm in the minority, and it's also Pumpkin Fest time, and it's apple picking time, and what do you got going start this off, Kim?
Plenty of fall Lauren. Stuff. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest is Scarecrow Festival. That's over in downtown St. Charles, but you can vote for your favorite handmade scarecrow over that one. That's one of the more unique things, but other than that, plenty of entertainment, arts and crafts, food vendors, and a carnival, of course. Free to get in. You're going to have to pay for the little things over there, but it already started today, 10 to 9. We'll also be 10 to 9 tomorrow, and Sunday, 10 to 5. But if you want to go to something else, there's the Great Highwood Pumpkin Festival, obviously downtown Highwood. You could do trick-or-treating tonight. You could do a 5K tomorrow and a costume contest on Sunday. Otherwise, again, normal festival, carnival rides, vendors, pumpkin carving, and a wall of lit pumpkins, so if you want to go at night. That starts today 4 to 11, goes tomorrow 8 to 11, and Sunday 11 to 9 with a daily admission of $5.
And my trick or treat tip, when you go to the store to buy the candy, do not buy candy that you like.
Yeah, because then you will eat it.
That's right. You eat the whole bag of it, so you've been warned.
Yeah, no, I think that's very smart advice.
And then what's the story on this Beer Fest Friday? I know people want to hear about that.
Yeah, so the Festive Ale, very clever. It's 6:30 to 10 today. It's a bunch of Midwest specialty brews. You got food and live music, and it's for charity, so that's pretty cool. And it's part of Artifacts Events. So let me pull up the thing right here. You can buy tickets, so you do have to buy tickets. They're not giving me a price right here, so I think it kind of depends on the donation. That's how you get your ticket. You just kind of put in the number, but that's going to be over on North Ravenswood Avenue. They suggest using the south entrance. A bunch of donors there, but it goes to Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. So a very good cause for something like that. If you do enjoy beer, I would suggest going to that. If you're a beer lover and you can't do anything tonight, there is the Bacon and Beer Classic tomorrow. That's at Soldier Field, 2 p.m. You can buy VIP tickets and get in at 1 p.m. And they start from $65. But you get to enjoy bacon-inspired tastes from local restaurants and craft beer and music and interactive games. So plenty of things for the average drinker this weekend as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, looking at this list that you're sharing with us now, Lauren, do you run down this list every Friday between now and 7 p.m.? Because you got a lot on this list here.
Oh, I could go forever. Well, it's funny because normally when Roe's in, he just creates these fake stories of who would be at this event and what they would be talking about.
I see.
So we almost only go through 2 or 3, maybe 4. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to actually get a little bit more out there. The great thing is we have this all online, so people can go there and check out the video about certain closures and all the information they need to know about certain events.
Well, don't get used to this because, you know, 7 o'clock, that's it. My career ends at 7 p.m. Let's see, what else is on the list for the weekend?
Something that was very interesting, a Chicago Campfire Festival. I didn't even know this was a thing, but this is also tomorrow. It's 2 to 10:30. It includes, obviously, real campfires, marshmallow roasting, s'mores, cocoa, a pumpkin patch, corn maze, bounce house, face painting. You can even watch Hocus Pocus, you know, Halloween favorite, at 8:30 in Chase Park. So something fun to do, kind of outdoorsy, maybe a little cold for that, but I'm sure the fire will help keep anybody warm.
And why don't we end with this dog parade? People I know are going to want to turn out for this on Sunday, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. People, especially people that love to dress up their pets. But it's Spooky Pooch Parade. So that's over at the Chicago Botanic Garden on Sunday, 11 to 1. Totally free to watch. So even if you don't have a pet, you can go on by. I've seen some interesting costumes these days that are made for dogs. But there will be a costume contest, so you can go and see who wins the big prize.
Thank you. We don't have a shortage of things to do, do
no.
we?
Mm-mm.
Coming up, I brought my record collection in, and maybe you can help me, too, because I do have a question about what to do with too many CDs. What do I do? How do I get rid of them? Am I supposed to sell them? Do people go on eBay? Do they go to stores and bring them in? But I don't think you can get much money for CDs because everything's streaming now. But I want to keep some CDs for the car, and you know, Mrs. Surratt says you got to get rid of them. So I don't know what to do, but maybe somebody can help at 312-981-7200. And I will play a record here on the Big AM 720 from my record collection, and it's a song that you know very well, but a story I don't think you know, and we'll share that with you. Coming right up after we get a little traffic check now from Lauren. What's up? As I mentioned, the record collection is with me this afternoon. Brought it in, and I have something to share with you. Because on this date, October 10th, back in 1939... the real Eleanor Rigby died in her sleep of unknown causes. She was 44 years old. Now, the Beatles song in 66 that featured her name was actually not written about her. You know about this? Paul McCartney's first draft of the song used the name Miss Daisy Hawkins. Kind of fits. Now, in the 80s, Eleanor Rigby's tombstone was noticed by somebody in the graveyard of St. Peter's Parish, a church in Woolton, Liverpool, which ironically is just a few feet from where John and Paul first met in 1957. Can you believe that? Isn't that wild? Paul said that after he had this name, Miss Daisy Hawkins, for the song Eleanor Rigby, he changed it to Eleanor Rigby because of the actress in England, Eleanor Braun. And she was in Help. And the Rigby part was the name of a liquor store he saw in Bristol. And there's a little more to the story after we hear a little bit of this.
Look at all the lovely people.
Thank you.
There's nothing wrong with your listening device. That's on us. Apparently, one channel did not come through, did it? Well, you know what? They don't play a lot of music here at WGN, so it's understandable. Weren't quite ready for that. At any rate, Paul McCartney said Eleanor Rigby, the name was totally fictitious. It was made up. But it's quite possible that Paul saw the Rigby grave and it just ended up in his subconscious. He may have stored it away in his head. And it's possible that he made a childhood visit to that graveyard and then the name just stuck. Maybe, he says. Anyway, now you know the rest of the story. Unfortunately, you didn't hear the rest of the song. That's the way it goes. Coming up after 4 o'clock here, we'll talk a little bit about marathon running, the pros and cons, training, diet and exercise. We'll do that. And also in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll find out whether that sports stuff you have at home is trash or a treasure. You ever wonder about autographed baseballs you may have, some autographed pictures you collected, various memorabilia, and you're thinking, maybe I should sell this stuff. Maybe I should find out what it's worth. We have somebody here who will tell us whether it's trash or treasure, and you'll be able to call in and pose that question. That is coming right up. And now, should we do the contest? We do that now? I think so. Well, we're going to do it now. Anyway, it's 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. And caller 19 gets a pair of tickets to Silver Creek Rock and Brew Fest on Sunday, October 27th. That's going to be going on 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern time because it's over in Michigan. 20 local breweries, live music from Elton John and Tom Petty tribute bands. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. Rock and Brew Fest. It's October 27th at the Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Caller 19 gets the tickets now, 312-981-7200. All right. Have to do a contest. Can't be an official show without a contest. It's Bob Surratt with you on the RoCon program. Ro's off, Anna's off, but I am here with you, and I'm glad you're there. And we will be here until 7 tonight. And I'm looking forward to the Canarble wagon that Ro always does on Friday at the end of the show. We will do that today. Interesting place to tell you about, too, out in Rosemont. Connection to Bill Murray and his brothers, too. More about that on the way. Rich Roper will be joining us, as he normally does on Fridays. And he saw the Breaking Bad movie already, El Camino. So we'll get the lowdown on that. And I want to ask him about a couple of documentaries that seem to have come and gone so quickly. I want to know what happened to them and if you can still see them somewhere. And we'll have live music here at a little after 6 o'clock. And these guys are supposed to be unreal. Have you heard of Great Moments in Vinyl? I love that name.
They're awesome.
Everybody around here has told me that. They've been in here?
Yeah, they do these concept where they basically do an entire album. And they do these, it's a concert, but they also give some background and story to the songs and some context to it.
Well, hopefully both channels will be available.
I hope so.
Stevie Wonder will be the featured artist on that coming up between 6 and 7 this evening. And I wanted to mention something else here. I'll wait till later on to tell you about that. There's a reason we're going to be talking about diet and exercise in a little bit. There's a reason that everybody around here is going to be putting on about 10 pounds starting next week. But I'll tell you about that when we return after the news. Let's do this. Hang on a second. The news. Let's get ready for that. It's next from the Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, Kim. As we've been talking about, Sunday is marathon day here in Chicago, and a good weather forecast for the runners. It's going to be cool and dry. The hottest Chicago marathon day, I don't know if you remember this, it was 2007, October 7th, 89 degrees. A little hot for running. The coldest one, 1988, 33. I think that's basically the temperature extreme we've had today here in Chicago. The great thing about WGN is you can just press a button and say, you're an athletic trainer. Is it really a good thing to run 26 miles? Hi, Jim. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. James Schaefer is an athletic trainer, and he is currently the ATI physical therapy athletic trainer for Plainfield High School. He'll be running his first marathon Sunday. It's always been on his bucket list. He's been running half marathons for years. Jim is also an adjunct professor at Aurora University, teaching athletic training courses. Why'd you decide to finally do it, James?
Well, for the past, I believe it's 4 years since they switched to the marathon lottery system, where you just enter your name in, and I've never been able to force myself to pull the trigger, so I figured entering myself into the lottery, if I get picked, I really don't have a choice.
Right.
So this year they picked me.
Here's the question I have for you, and everybody has seen this on the news. At the finish line, people are collapsing and they're being resuscitated, and it makes one think, is this a good thing to run 26 miles? Give me the pros and cons here, Jim.
Well, I think the pros for me personally is it's just, I think it's a big accomplishment to be able to not only run the 26.2, but to train for the months and weeks leading up to it and actually having the discipline to do so. The cons, obviously, if your body can't take the stresses of training and running for a marathon, that's a huge con, which those people who collapse are either not prepared or they're pushing themselves too hard to reach a certain milestone that they set themselves out for.
If you want to keep running long distances, but you don't want to have a knee replacement or hip replacement, what's the best advice?
My best advice is, first of all, make sure you have correct shoes, whether you know what shoe that might be, or you go to a running store that can monitor what you look like when you walk, when you run, and fit you for a proper shoe. And then also making sure that you do cross training. During my training for the past 14, 15 weeks, I run 4 days a week, but also I sneak in a swim on one of my off days. I'll ride a bike. I don't always do road running. There's a track that I have access to, so I have a softer surface on my knees. I'm just switching it up to make sure you give your body a break and not always doing constant hard workouts.
You hear a lot about walking and how good that is for you. If you do a fast walk, can that be as beneficial as a run?
Oh, yeah. There's always a benefit to any type of cardiovascular activity, whether you walk or you run. I always have gone by the saying that no matter how slow you go, you're going faster than the person who sits on the couch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
right. And I like to live by that adage. But, yeah, I mean, whatever people can do and whatever they can comfortably do without causing any too many aches and pains and things like that, walking is extremely beneficial.
People like you still into carb loading before a big run?
I'm actually in the middle of my carb load. I started it a very light one on Tuesday, and today and tomorrow are my heavy days where I eat about 720 grams of carbs. That's about 90 to 95% of my daily intake is going to be carbs today and tomorrow.
Now, for most of us who go out running occasionally, maybe do a few miles, run for a half hour or 40 minutes or so, is it best to take a day off between runs? Because there's always been some school of thought that you need to give your body a break, especially as you get older. True or false?
Both true and false. I would say it depends on the intensity of the workout that you do. I always have what I call kind of an easy shakeout day where I'm not trying to run a fast pace. I'm not trying to do any tempo training or anything of that nature. And after my easy run, which the most distance I run on that's about 8 miles, the next day I'll do some kind of speed training or hill workout or something like that. But those are the only days where I run consecutively. After my long runs on the weekends, which got up to 20 miles, I would take a day or two off in between my next run.
And tell me again why we shouldn't freak out over that scene at the end of all marathons where people are collapsing and they don't look like they're feeling very good.
It's just something when you actually finish that and you complete that. When I completed my first half marathon, because I was thinking to myself, why do people do this? And seeing what you see on those scenes and then just finishing it and getting through, and just after you've recovered and you've had, you know, your hydration and whatever you do to recover, just looking back and realizing what you've accomplished. It's just, to me, it's worth it. I'm really excited. I look forward to Sunday.
You're an expert, so let's get this straight once and for all. True or false? Running shoes, even if you don't use them a lot, will wear out just by sitting on the shelf.
That is correct. That's a true statement. One of my jobs when I was in college at Illinois State University actually was at Dick's Sporting Goods. I worked in the shoe department, and we would keep an eye on the ones that we would have on display, because after about 6 or 7 months of sitting on the shelf, if that display set wasn't sold, we would cancel it out or discard it and send it back to the manufacturer, send it back to our distribution center, because it just, the material in the shoe itself just kind of breaks down over time.
And what kind of stretching do you need to do, not for a marathon, but just for a relatively short run?
It's always good to have some type of dynamic warm-up. My training, if I go out and I do a hill workout where I'm running a quarter-mile hill or an eighth of a mile hill, 10 repetitions with small breaks in between, my warm-up is always going to be about a mile, mile and a half jog before I do quick motions. So your dynamic stretches are your high knees that you see athletes do, your butt kicks and things of that nature. That's always more beneficial versus after the run where you do your static stretching, where you're actually holding stretches for 20, 25, 30 seconds and making sure that you're loose. And the cool down is always important, and making sure that you get the oxygen to your muscles to get the lactic acid out of your muscles that causes that soreness that you feel during your workout.
Yeah, I guess the worst thing to do after a run, whether it's a marathon or just running for a few miles, would be just to sit, right? You want to keep moving.
Yeah, just to sit down. Usually what I do after my runs is I take my dogs for a walk. They enjoy it, and I get to spend some time with them while I also cool down and let my heart rate settle back down, and I go home and I stretch out.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good.
Yeah, those dogs never get tired. All right, well, the forecast for race day, partly sunny. Temperatures will probably start in the upper 30s, but Sunday's high will eventually get to 54. No chance of rain. Winds, 15 to 25 out of the west-southwest. So not bad. Sounds pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah, it does. It's almost optimum running weather. If the wind doesn't get too bad in our faces, it's almost perfect. I'll have a throwaway shirt at the starting line that I'll have a sweatshirt or something on, and I'll run in my running shorts and long sleeves like I've done since I've been training for this. But, yeah, that's almost optimal weather.
I'll be stretching in front of the television watching you. Good luck to you. It's James Schaefer, athletic trainer, and he's at Plainfield High School, and he's at Aurora University also teaching athletic training courses, and this will be his first marathon. I'm excited about the weather Sunday because I think it's our last 16-inch softball game of the season. But I'll be with you in spirit, Jim. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. It was nice talking to you. Good luck with your softball game.
Yeah, good talking to you. Thanks. And have a good race on Sunday. Let's get an update on the Friday crush hour, and then we'll find out whether that sports stuff you've got at home, the memorabilia you've been saving, is trash or treasure. But first, it's traffic time now, and here's Lauren. It's Bob Sirota on the Rokan Show. That's correct. I'm like the 7-year locust invasion. You just cannot get rid of me. And we're joined by an expert on sports memorabilia, I'd say. Scott, is that how you would describe yourself?
Oh, I would describe myself as an expert, sure. Others may differ.
Well, I don't think so. Scott owns AU Sports in Morton Grove on Dempster, and if you're looking for some football, baseball, hockey, basketball stuff, that's the place to go. And we've asked Scott to come in today because everybody's got memorabilia at home. The missus will refer to it as junk, but a lot of us think it's a treasure. But is it trash? Is it treasure? Scott's here to help us with this. And now you get this a lot in the store, right, Scott? People come in, they bring in autographed baseballs or pictures, scorecards. And how do you determine whether it's worth anything or not? Because people, you know, they're cleaning out their closet. They want to know if it should just go in the trash or if there is a treasure that they have.
Well, I can give an example. You know, people come in, I always say, don't throw anything away until you check into it. I can give you an example. A woman came in with a collection of a relative who had passed away. She had no idea what was there. She thought it was garbage. She was going to throw it in the trash. since we've done business with her, we've paid her over $6,000 for the stuff she just basically was pulling out of drawers and closets. So nothing's trash until I say it's trash.
And as a general rule, what's something you see a lot of and it's never worth anything? And on the other side, what is something that usually is valuable?
Well, I can tell you right now, there are tons and tons of people out there who have sports cards from the late 1980s all through the 1990s, early 2000s. 99% of that is has no retail value. They overproduced it in that area. People put it away, said, oh, in 25 years, I'm going to sell it and give it the money to my kids. No, just like any other market, they flooded it. Everybody's got it at the same time. So that's what I would consider the bottom part. That's the stuff that people think's worth something is worth nothing. On the other hand, anytime you've got autographs or good memorabilia or even old cards of Mickey Mantle, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente, early Michael Jordan stuff, that's stuff that's always going to have a strong market. It's always going to be desirable.
And do you see mostly Chicago memorabilia, or do people bring in all sorts of items from around the country?
No, you get, especially when you're dealing in sports cards, you're going to get everything.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like other things, Michael Jordan, there is so much Michael Jordan stuff out there. I would say I see more of his stuff than any other player, period, in any sport.
And when somebody passes away, does that always make an autograph or a card or a baseball that they've signed more valuable?
It does nothing for the card value. It might make it more desirable. Somebody may decide, oh, let me pick up a couple of his cards now. The autographs, it depends. It depends on how accessible he was when the player was signing. For instance, one of our old favorites, Ron Santo. He signed everything. Ernie Banks signed everything. So the price didn't really go up that much, but the desirability did.
Now, I'm looking at a catalog from Heritage Auctions, one of the big auction houses, and they go through these auctions with all sorts of memorabilia from all sports. And there's a Mickey Mantle card in their book here, a 1952 Mickey Mantle card, and the estimate on this, $800,000, the estimated value of this. And so when you see something like that, you immediately think of going into the basement, going through some old boxes, wondering if your mom threw out your valuable card. Well, what makes a card like that worth hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Well, that particular card is graded. And the graded community is almost like a completely different niche in the hobby business. It's paying a company, usually PSA or Beckett, to grade your cards on a scale of 1 to 10. The higher the grade, the better the card. And when you've got a card from 1952, that one is an 8.5 out of 10, which is fantastic.
Does that mean the quality of the card?
It looks like it almost came out of a pack. It's almost like you opened the pack right there in front of you.
Uh-huh.
You know, a 10 is unheard of in a card like that. So if that's $800,000, imagine what if a 10 ever turned up. But that's a lot of what it is. Some of the cards accrue a great value if they're older and have that graded system of 9 or 10. Anything less than that is probably not worth investing your time in, unless it's really super old, like Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb type of stuff.
I remember a couple of years ago hearing about a game-worn uniform from Ernie Banks that was extremely valuable. Is that because it was game-worn? Is that because it's Ernie Banks?
Well, both. Today, a lot of game-worn stuff, including cleats, jerseys, everything, a lot of the ball clubs, like the Cubs do it for Cubs charity, is they put this stuff on sale or for auction. You can actually find it fairly easily. An Ernie Banks uniform, that wasn't stuff that was getting passed out as easily. So obviously, yeah, game-worn, and especially from what year? If it's like, you know, anywhere between 1954 and 62, the first, you know, few years of his career, that's going to be a lot more valuable.
When did this business change? Because I remember years ago, you could go into various sports shops and buy a major league uniform for not a lot of money. And then all of a sudden, the value just shot up. What happened?
I think it was just kind of a supply and demand thing, like anything. The card industry always ruled the roost, and in the 80s is when it took off and skyrocketed. That brought a lot more people into it, and therefore brought a lot more of the fringe memorabilia into it. Not to say that a game-used jersey is fringe. It's beautiful. But it wasn't as prevalent then. And it brought bigger speculators in to buy bigger things, to find collections, to go around the country. I've seen game used uniforms from Ty Cobb and Jimmy Fox. Those are amazing.
And I think people are lining up here on the phones. They want to know if they have trash or treasure,
you know,
or if their significant other has trash or treasure. And Scott will be able to tell you. What's that, Scott?
You didn't ask me if I was going to run the Chicago Marathon this weekend.
I think I know the answer already.
You're on to me. Okay.
But I like the number 55 jersey, the Doug Buffon jersey.
No, this I'm going a little more newer with this. This is Lance Briggs.
Okay. All right, I got you. 312-981-7200, the number to call. And if you've got a question for Scott Beatty, co-owner of AU Sports on Dempster and Morton Grove, if you want to know whether there's a trash or treasure lurking around your house, give us a call. And right after the news, we'll get to the calls at 312-981-7200. Okay, let's get to the news, sponsored by AmericasBath.com. And here's Kim. From the Rokan building, high atop a drizzly, getting even more chilly by the moment, foggy, cloudy Chicago. And it's time to find out if you have trash or treasure. Joining us this afternoon is the co-owner of AU Sports on Dempster and Morton Grove, Scott Beatty. And Scott's been good enough to stand by and agree to take some phone calls here because people want to know about the sports memorabilia they have in a closet or in the basement. For example, there's Jennifer who's got a question for you, Scott. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, Scott. We have a Big Pappy home run ball from from the Home Run Derby.
Repeat that again, Jennifer.
A Big Pappy ball from a Home Run Derby.
Scott?
Signed.
This is a ball he hit during the Home Run Derby?
Correct.
Okay. You know what? That was definitely something. And you said it's signed by him, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that is definitely something that's a very desirable piece. David Ortiz is one of the more popular players in baseball, especially on the East Coast. Well, maybe not New York, but certainly everywhere else. And that's a nice collectible. That is definitely worth a few dollars. I would hang on to it. I might even think about getting it authenticated for future purposes if you wanted to sell it or to or pass it on to someone.
Might not be a big treasure, but certainly not trash.
No, absolutely not.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Jennifer. Let's go to Steve in Bolingbrook. What do you got there, Steve?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call, and it's great to hear the legendary Bob Surratt back on the radio, Bob.
No. Stop with that. I'm not a legend. I'm just a myth. What do you have in the way of sports memorabilia?
As a diehard fan, I've actually got an original set of blueprints for the lights at Wrigley Field framed in my Cubs bar. And they are the real deal.
How'd you get that? Where'd you get it?
I could say Watergate, but that's just lying. No way. My parents bought their house from some 50 years ago. Their son was one of the architects working on it in Iowa. So my dad called in a favor to the guy he bought the house from. Next thing you know, his son is sending us an extra set.
What do you think, Scott?
I think it's an amazing piece. I think it's very unique. I can't say how many sets of these blueprints exist, but I can tell you I haven't seen one. So, and you've got them framed and put up in your bar. It sounds like a great conversation piece, too. Yeah, that's definitely something. I mean, as a Cub collector myself, that's something I would definitely be interested in.
Where's the bar, Steve?
In Bolingbrook. At my house.
Oh, I get it.
That's the man bar.
In the cave.
And you got him framed?
And my dad and I were actually at that game. Rained out in the fourth inning. We had to come back on the ninth.
I remember that night very specifically. Yeah, that's a great piece. That's definitely, I'm going to call that big treasure.
Okay, there you go. Hang on to it, Steve. And thanks for the kind words. Appreciate the call. And here we go to Janine in Crystal Lake. What do you got there, Janine? Trash or treasure? We'll find out. Ask Scott.
I have a lot. I have Wheaty boxes with Larry Bird, Walter Payton, Michael Jordan. I have the Sports Illustrated magazine with Goodbye Walter Payton, Goodbye Sweetness. And then I have holograms from Michael Jordan's movie.
All right.
I don't know what to do with any of it.
Any of those sound promising, Scott?
Well, I got to tell you, the Sports Illustrateds and the Wheaties boxes, again, these are stuff that were collected by everybody, mass-produced. They do have a market. It's not as strong as it used to be. Probably, depending on the Wheaties box, it could be as little as $5 or $6, could be as much as $20, but none of them have a super high price tag on them. Same thing with the Sports Illustrateds or sport-type magazines from that era. A lot of people collect them. They're a nice collectible, and they're sellable, but they don't have a big price tag on them. As far as, like, the Space Jam movie lenticulars, they made so many different ones that I would actually have to see those to know if they are very collectible or not. And if you could always email us at our location and send some photos, and I'd be more than happy to tell you what you've got.
Go ahead and give your email, Scott.
It's just simply the name of the business. It's AU Sports, AUSPORTS. Very simply at AOL.com. Go ahead and send us some photos, and I'll let you know.
Thanks for listening this afternoon, Janine.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And here's Amy out in Rockford. What's the trash or treasure question you have there, Amy?
Hi there. Hey, I had the pleasure of meeting Ray Nitschke years ago when he was a spokesperson for my husband's company. He took a football up to the Packers for us and had it signed well, by himself, obviously, and then Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Reggie White. And I think we also have Clay Matthews on it. I'm not positive. It's been tucked away for a while. But I know those other four for sure he had done for us. So just kind of curious about it.
I love that a future Hall of Famer like Clay Matthews is the bum on that ball.
Yeah, now I would think that would be rare
absolutely,
piece.
Especially to a Packers fan, because Packers fans are so passionate.
Mm-hmm.
And you've really got maybe four of the top five or six players in Packers history on that ball. Have you ever had it authenticated?
We haven't. But I know he had it. I mean, we knew him, so he took it and had it.
I'm not doubting its authenticity, but sometimes a piece like that, you might want to pay the small authentication fee just to have that, because it's such a nice piece.
Okay.
If you ever want to sell it to someone, you're probably going to have to get that done, but that's a really nice piece.
All right, Amy,
okay.
Good luck with that. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
You brought up an interesting point, Scott, authenticating. How do we know an autograph is legitimate?
Well, it's like this. You know, some people come to me and they bring me their autographs, and then I say, do you have any prior authentication to it? And they'll say, well, no, but I got this in person. And it's like, well, that's great, but I cannot pass that on to the next customer. Say, how do you know it's real? Well, the guy I bought it from told me it was.
Yeah.
So they're in the industry today because there is a very high volume of fake autographs of some of the bigger names, Ali, Tiger Woods, Mickey Mantle, Michael Jordan, that you need to go into the authentication process. What it does is it makes them a little more valuable. So whatever money you put into it, you're not going to lose. It's going to add to the value. And number two, it makes them ultimately sellable. No one can ever doubt that what you have is real if you have that proper authentication. We use Beckett, and we can help people move their pieces into authentication with Beckett as well.
Mike's hanging on with a question for Scott Beatty of AU Sports in Morton Grove. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I got a bunch of stuff from Barry Bonds. We knew him when I was younger, so I got signed balls, a signed bat from the 93 Giants. But after the scandal, I didn't know. Seemed like a lot of that stuff dropped out.
Yeah, did it, Scott?
100%. All the guys, McGuire, Sammy, Bonds, Roger Clemens, all those guys who got pinched, you know, up in that period, whether they are guilty or not, have been, their value has gone down. But Barry Bonds is still, I mean, look at him statistically, one of the greatest ball players who ever lived. His stuff still holds enough of a value to say that it's a slight treasure. I mean, the baseballs don't go for what they would have, but they're still, you know, you can find Barry Bonds balls somewhere in that $80 to $125 mark. So they're not worthless, but they don't have the huge value they might have had 20 years ago,
sure. Neither trash nor treasure.
Right, you're right in the middle on that, sure.
Right in the middle, sweet.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Hi, Susan, and where are you? Oh, you're out there in Buffalo Grove. What's up?
Just curious. I became friends with Stacey King during the when they won there, and then they had the Wheaties box come out, and he signed it. So I don't know if that's worth anything.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, like I said, the Wheaties boxes themselves, the Bulls championship boxes, they're worth probably about $10 retail. I mean, Stacey King was not one of the top four or five guys on the team, so it adds a little bit of value. But honestly, I would say it probably has a high value of about $30.
Okay. You going to keep it?
I don't know. I still have it after all these years.
Yeah, when something's worth like 30, 40 bucks or something, you think, well, might as well keep it. Now, if you hear, well, this is worth the $1,000, then that's another question, right?
But, Bob, love hearing you again on WGN. I love you to pieces.
I love you, Susan. Appreciate that, and thanks very much. Have a great weekend. And this is Lisa in Arlington Heights. What do you got, Lisa?
Hi, Bob. I have, from my father, my late father's collection, some baseball cards dating back from what I can see to 1964 tops. They're in books, in plastic, in card order for the most part, and some unopened packages of cards from the early 80s.
What do you think that's worth, Scott?
Well, that's where condition's going to come in. Are these full sets? Are they the star players we talked about earlier? Is there Hank Aaron? Is there Roberto Clemente and Willie Mays? Stuff like that.
Yes, they do have a Bob Clemente card. It says Bob.
They said Bob back then. They,
really?
They tried to like whitewash him from Roberto to Bob.
That's awful.
It is. Now, Roberto Clemente is like one of my favorite players. As a matter of fact, just real quick, I have from Puerto Rico a beach towel with Roberto Clemente's face on it hanging up in my store.
Nice.
Wow.
The cards is something we would definitely have to take a look at. The cards could be worth a significant amount of money, but condition and how many there are the two factors.
Condition, I will tell you, is very good because he has them all in plastic sleeves.
Yeah.
But I know there's something, too, isn't there, with the cut of the card, too, when they made them?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Isn't something when they cut the cards too?
There's cards that were considered off cut. There's so many different conditions. I would have to see the cards. You can, like I said, you can get a hold of me at AU Sports in Morton Grove. I'd be more than happy to tell you what you've got, but I would need to at least take a look at a portion of them.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, I may bring a book in. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Hope to see you.
And hi, Paul in Wilmette. Trash or treasure?
Hey.
What's your object?
It is my brother in the 60s or 70s delivered the Chicago Daily News to a guy named William Herridge, who was the old American League Baseball commissioner. Uh-huh. And as a Christmas tip, he gave my brother a framed, signed, autographed photo of Babe Ruth.
Wow.
Yeah, that's definitely a piece that's treasure. I'm going to call that one of the ultimate treasures because Babe Ruth, to me, is just the guy. There's no questions about it. But again, we've talked about the authentication process. You 100% want to get that done. And again, if you contact us, we can help you through that process.
Paul, good luck.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Appreciate the call. And how exactly do they authenticate, Scott? I mean, how do those companies work?
Well,
do they do?
Well, the company we prefer to use, which is Beckett, they have a great staff of guys led by a gentleman named Steve Grad, probably the number one authenticator in the country. And it's just a long history of templates and understanding the writing styles, how certain guys' autographs changed over the years. You look at a Ryan Sandberg autograph from his rookie season, it does not look the same as when he autographs today. So it's just really trusting the experts you have, and we do trust them.
I love this game, Trash or Treasure. Our thanks to Scott Beatty. You can see him on Dempster, 6006 Dempster in Morton Grove. Bring him your stuff, look around the store, and buy, sell, whatever. And Scott, appreciate you coming down here this
afternoon.
Absolutely,
Bob. Anytime.
All right, good to see you. And what are you eating this weekend? We have a list. I'm not going to go through all of them, but this is very interesting. It came out today, I think, from the editors of Prevention.com. 50 foods you should never eat, according to health experts. We'll share that with you coming right up. First up, here's the traffic. Friday demolition derby underway. Lauren? Looking forward to a nice restaurant at some point this weekend. Well, I'm not sure you want to hear this, but it may be useful information. 50 foods you should never eat, according to health experts. This was on prevention.com. The editors posted this today. Doctors and dietitians sharing the foods they refuse to eat due to pesticides, GMOs, and carcinogenic ingredients. Are you going to a movie? Because you know one of the items on this list is going to be butter-flavored popcorn. And am I pronouncing this right? Diacetyl. It's used in a lot of fake butter flavorings. D-I-A-C-E-T-Y-L. I meant to look up the pronunciation of that. But at any rate, despite the fact that the chemical is so harmful to factory workers that it's known to cause an occupational disease called popcorn lung, the director of science and research at Women's Voices for the Earth says that people continue to have the butter-flavored popcorn. Now, more and more of your theaters have the real deal. So that would be the preferred method of buttered popcorn. Only have it if it's not the butter flavor popcorn. And boy, I think about how bad I used to be about this. I used to like the butter popcorn so much before Mrs. Surratt reformed me. I would actually have a trick when I'd go to the movies, and I'd order the butter popcorn. And then as the person behind the counter was putting the butter on the popcorn, I would distract them. I would say something like, "When was this theater built?" And my hope would be that the person would forget about the butter dripping into the popcorn, and I'd get more than what I was supposed to get. Not anymore, though. Also, fish. There's some fish on this list, and you think, wait a minute, the fish is healthy, right? Lately, there's a big movement to get away from fish unless it's wild. The problem, according to the experts, now fish, which is naturally low in saturated fat, and some types like salmon, are also high in omega-3 fat, reducing the risk of stroke and heart attack and inflammation throughout the body. It's all good. But while we need to eat more seafood and less red meat, some fish, like farmed salmon, are contaminated with carcinogenic chemicals such as PCBs, pesticides, and antibiotics, according to Dr. Margaret Cuomo, the author of A World Without Cancer. So you notice that the fish that is wild is often more expensive. Well, according to the health experts, it's well worth it. How about gummy vitamins? Healthy, right? I don't know. Each serving, about 15 calories, 2 or 3 grams of sugar a day. Doesn't seem like much. But the author of a book called The Supplement Handbook, Mark Moyad, points out that this translates to nearly 6 cups of sugar a year. Not to mention gummies have artificial food dyes and can contain a laundry list of other problematic ingredients. Many contain gluten, he says, and some also contain corn syrup, carmine, and pre-gelatinized cornstarch. So the word from the doctor, always go to food for nutrition first. Don't teach kids to rely on pills at such a young age. Liquid multivitamins, they say, can be a good alternative for kids, especially the ones who have trouble swallowing pills. All right, let's do one more from the list here. I don't want to ruin your whole weekend, but this is very interesting. If you want to see the whole list of 50 foods you should never eat, according to health experts, go to prevention.com. And what else here is... Well, you know, here, let's talk about salt for a second. I've heard pros and cons of this. Table salt starts out as a healthy sea salt, but the extreme processing that happens next makes this one of the worst things you can put in your body. For an all-natural, unprocessed way to add flavor to food, they say choose Celtic sea salt or Himalayan salt. Okay? There you go. Have a healthy weekend. And coming up, we are going to eventually get Rich Roper in here to talk movies and also Rokan's Canarble Wagon. And we'll have some restaurant news to share with you as well. News is next in 2 minutes. Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Taplantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
He told me Ro would be off, but I thought maybe Anna would show up since we worked together at Channel 5 for a while there. But apparently she heard I was coming in and decided she'd stay away, too. But Rich Roper's joining us, as always.
Yeah, this is Robert and Bob and I go all the way back. One of the, of course, he's best known for his softball abilities, but also a broadcaster for those of you playing at home. And I know it's great to be here filling in for Ro and Anna, but I feel like some folks out there, like when they went to see Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda had like a sore throat, and Bobby from Berwyn was going to play the role of Hamilton, you know, putting on the costume and quickly in the back.
I'm going to refund
all the
admission tickets. All right, it's the top five at five at this time every Friday on Ro's show. So let's do it. First at number five.
Number five.
Actually, it should be at, but first, and then Orion says
it was
at five.
Right? Orion's not going to do it again. That's extra money.
Chicago teachers union officials don't believe enough progress has been made over a contract stalemate, even though a new high-profile player joined the negotiating table with just days to go until a potential strike by Chicago public school teachers. Board of Education President Miguel Duvalier took part in discussions for the first time, and here you go.
The message is the same message from the very beginning. Let's work together and let's reach an agreement. There were some very thoughtful comments made on the part of CTU members, and I appreciated hearing them.
CTU President Jesse Starkey said avoiding a strike rests on getting promises about key issues in writing.
He clearly understands some of these issues. I don't think he understands, though, how difficult it's been to hold the Board of Education accountable. And that without writing, without promises in writing in our contract, we don't feel that we can actually deliver the things that we need to deliver for students.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot said the two sides still remain far apart on the big issues while the clock is ticking.
I'm feeling exactly the same as I felt a couple days ago. We have made some progress on some issues, but not the core set of issues on compensation, on benefits, insurance, staffing. Those issues are still out there to be had.
Is this a rerun from a news story of years ago? This sounds familiar,
cyclical,
doesn't it?
Bob, absolutely. I still have... I'm fairly confident they're going to resolve this. You know, we'll get right to the precipice. As Mary Lightfoot said, it's always about the same things. And, you know, when she mentioned staffing, as almost any teacher will tell you, classrooms are way too big. There's almost always not enough teachers per student. When you're teaching 27, 28, 35 students, it really harms the educational process. And then, you know, benefits. Now you'll see salaries printed and people will be like, oh, they only work 8 months a year, which is not true, of course, because teachers work year-round. They also put their own money into their classrooms. I have relatives who teach in the system, and it's, you know, look, it's a great job. It's a huge challenge, and they're you know, invaluable. We just hope they resolve it, because if not, we're going to have a couple hundred thousand kids who got nowhere to go, too.
They'll settle it. Everybody will be back to school, and then we'll go through this next year, unfortunately. That's the way it has been working. Okay. Yeah. Moving up the charts. Here we go.
Number four.
Ronan Farrow made his first television appearance since those bombshell excerpts from his new book, Catch and Kill, came out earlier in the week. He was on Good Morning America with George Stephanopoulos, and the interview opened by reviewing many items already reported, but it turned more interesting when Stephanopoulos asked how NBC handled the specifics of Matt Lauer's allegations and his firing.
They're saying they did something as soon as they knew.
So this is an important point, George. This is not what the reporting in the book suggests. We spent several years reporting this out, extensively fact-checking it. What we show in this book, with a paper trail, with documents, is that there were multiple secret settlements and non-disclosures being struck with women at NBC News.
But those were
News.
After the fact, weren't they, the two non-disclosures?
Nope. Years before, over a period of 6 to 7 years. There were 7 non-disclosure agreements. Multiple ones of those were with Matt Lauer accusers. This is years before this incident with Brooke Nevels and the firing.
And
I spoke to senior executives who were told about those earlier incidents.
With Matt Lauer?
Indeed.
They definitely know. So when they say this, the first they heard about any allegations about Matt Lauer were after the fact, were after November 2017?
I'll let the facts in the book speak for themselves, but I think that is difficult to believe when you look at the documents and records.
You know, most of the time when a high-profile book comes out and there's a lot of promotion, after a while you think, you know, I've heard everything. I'm not going to buy the book. Not so with this book. And isn't Ronan Farrow impressive. His reporting, his demeanor, everything about this guy.
Yeah, he's very serious about this and has dedicated his professional life to this, you know, very important subject. And I saw somebody on Twitter, you know, a few months ago in the media saying, you know, your worst nightmare is, you know, a phone message from Ronan Farrow, call me back.
Exactly.
And, you know, Matt Lauer firing back, though, as well, you know, with that letter he wrote, you know, put out this week. And there's a lot of, and even what Ronan Farrow's saying here, I think there's still some room. Yes, he reported the heck out of the story, but there's still some room for nuance and disagreement and interpretation and two sides to some of these stories.
Well, now it seems the spotlight is on NBC News management. Mm-hmm. To quote from Watergate days, what did they know? When did they know it? And what's the story behind NBC News not running Ronan Farrow's story when he was working for the company?
Yeah, it's all the makings of, although it's, you know, it's fascinating reportage, but you can see this becoming a limited series, just like the Roger Ailes story was with, you know, Russell Crowe playing him. And there's a feature film coming out in just about a month about the Fox News, you know, adventures, if you not adventures, you know, the
misadventures.
The misadventures and the harassments and the, you know, the very serious charges of sexual assault. Charlize Theron and Margot Robbie, among others, are going to be in that one. So,
yeah. And now, did HBO just rush out their series because the movie was coming out?
It was Showtime.
Showtime.
That was based on The Loudest Voice in the Room, which is a very good book about Roger Ailes, who, you know, obviously had a very dark side, but also was a seminal figure in so many ways in media, you know, going all the way back to doing stuff for Nixon's campaign as a political operative, and then obviously as the founder of the Fox News Channel. But they had that in the works. If you haven't had a chance to see that, Russell Crowe's astonishingly good.
Yeah,
for Russell Crowe, right? Yeah. Did you see that?
Right, I saw it. Man. I thought, you know what? They ought to, right now, as they're preparing all the award shows for the award season, just make time for Russell Crowe's speech, because he's got to win everything.
Unbelievable. I mean, and we've seen for a long time he's a great actor. He won the Oscar 20 years ago. But, you know, when they talk about disappearing into a character, he really did.
We'll get to the top three here in a second. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on good old WGN-TV. Time to play What's My Lane now. Here's Lauren with the traffic. It's Bob Surratt on the Roll Con Show. This is like when you rent a car. You drive it into the ground. You don't really care about anything because you're just giving it back to the rent-a-car company. So at 7 o'clock, you know, don't look at me. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to have fun here. And we are continuing with Rich Roper and the Top 5 at 5. And what's the next number there? Oh.
Number 3.
Oh, yeah. You know this music, right? Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad is back. The Breaking Bad movie El Camino is out today on Netflix. Rich is going to review it in just a little bit. In this movie, we find out what happens to Aaron Paul's character, Jesse Pinkman, after the events of the finale 6 years ago. El Camino was written and directed by Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan, and it stars Aaron Paul. And Aaron said when the show was over, he thought he was done playing Jesse.
It was a great run, man. It was such a wild journey for everybody. You know, Breaking Bad was, it felt like it was at the center of pop culture. And it was, to be at the center of that was a wild ride for all of us. And so we were so blessed that it had happened, that we were a part of it. But we were also incredibly okay with saying goodbye and unzipping these skins and never putting them on again.
Remember binge watching this, and you just could not after the episode was over, you just had to watch the next one immediately.
Yeah, can you believe it was September 2013 was the last episode, and I saw Aaron Paul 2 days after they wrapped the last episode. It hadn't aired yet. I used to go to Albuquerque all the time for the Reels channel, which is out there in the Albuquerque studios, which is where they filmed Breaking Bad. And I'll never forget, when it first started, they took me on a golf cart tour, and they're like, hey, do you want to go see this new show set? And, you know, you walked right in, and it was Better Call Saul's office was there, and Walter White's living room and, you know, backyard and all that stuff, all sets. And about a year later, you couldn't get within 100 yards of that.
Sure, yeah.
But he said exactly that same thing right after he had repped. He was like, dude, it was the role of a lifetime, and I'm so glad because I'm exhausted from playing because he's such a tortured, complex character. So, but he's back, and we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, Rich Roper's review of the movie, because he saw it already, is coming up. And I just hope that and I guess because it's Vince Gilligan, it will be photographed as beautifully as Breaking Bad, the TV series, because it was like a work of art.
You're absolutely right about that. The cinematography was amazing. I will say this. The only spoiler I'm going to give away is I was very surprised at the crossover with the Downton Abbey movie. I didn't see that coming.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see that coming.
That
was a shocker.
Lady Mary showing up. Said spoiler alert. Yeah, okay. All right, let's go to the next one right here.
Number two.
Stephen Colbert aired the second part of his interview with Paul McCartney on The Late Show. Among other things, the legendary Beatle reminisced about his days with the Fab Four and how being knighted made him feel like Harry Potter.
You've got a little red cushion, and you've been told what to do. So you kneel down on the cushion. And then she takes the sword and does it either side of your shoulder and then says, "Arise, Sir Paul." So you were an ordinary guy, and when she does that, you're now magically Sir Paul.
Wow.
It's just like Harry Potter.
Everything is just, he's still amazed by life, isn't he? It's amazing. The people like my music.
Yeah. The guy is incredible. Right. And the way he has always handled the press and done his public relations and all these interviews. Mm. And the word about Paul, and I had the good fortune to interview him a couple of times, but his people take great pains to make sure everything is perfect. But then when Paul arrives, anything goes. I mean, the PR people may say, no, he only has 8 minutes now, and right at 8 minutes, he is gone. Mm. But Paul will unfailingly stick around, shake everybody's hand, pose for pictures. It's really something something to see.
It's really cool, and I remember that you had a chance to talk to him a couple of times, and I think he truly appreciates what those 30 seconds mean to every single person who's met him since 1964. As opposed to Ringo, who I love, but Ringo's always been like, Ringo, the classic Ringo is like, you know, when you meet him, he's like, off you go. And right after you meet him, he sends you away.
Peace and love.
This is a serious message.
No more autographs.
No more packages. I will not be signing. Anyway, peace and love.
Yeah. From the beginning, Paul was the one who enjoyed and appreciated and understood how important the interaction was with the press and with media. Yeah. But I don't know if you know this, Rich, but and this is how I got my name. A lot of people don't know how to spell my last name, but I always remind them that my great-great-great-great-grandfather in the UK, his name was Ott, O-T-T. He was knighted and became Sir Ott.
There you go.
Thank you. We needed a little
off you go
drum and timp there here. Okay, let's head for the top of the charts.
Number one.
There are many wonderful things about the Between Two Ferns movie that's streaming now on Netflix. The Keanu Reeves interview segment was pretty short. It's clear that Zach Galifianakis, as we call him, conducted entire interviews with each celebrity, but given the constraints of time and the demands of cohesive narrative, some were cut shorter than others, including the chat with Reeves. Thankfully, Netflix has liberated the full interview from its digital prison. Here you go.
Well, your name is Keanu, which is Hawaiian.
Yeah.
But like Obama, you weren't born in Hawaii, were you?
No, I wasn't.
You were born?
In Beirut, Lebanon.
Oh, like Obama.
No.
He was born in the Middle East, right? In the Matrix, Neo is the chosen one.
Yeah.
So he's Jewish?
I'm sorry, what?
Neo is Jewish. Because he's chosen. He's the chosen one. There's a big conspiracy theory that you're not aging because you're immortal. Is that why your movies feel like an eternity?
Well, eternity feels shorter than this.
There's your number one. And for people who don't know about Between Two Ferns, explain this.
Yeah,
Richard.
Zach Galifianakis plays a kind of low rent version of himself. He has the sixth highest rated public access show in Southern North Carolina, and he does interviews between two ferns, but he gets all these big stars. And the movie starts off with him saying to Matthew McConaughey, "Of all the things you could have won an Oscar for, are you surprised as I was that it was for acting?"
So they're all in on it, though, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
Have to be.
You got to be a good sport. Yeah.
All right, there's your top five at five from the Rokan Show, and Rich, you're going to return with the movie review of the new Breaking Bad film, and also I want to ask you about a couple of other things that are out and about, including that Judy Garland thing.
Sure, we're glad to talk about it.
That's all on the way, along with Rose Knarble Wagon coming right up. Traffic time first, I believe. Is that correct? Oh, news. All right, we'll get to the news in two right here.
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life. And I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Rokan has entrusted me with his world-famous carnival wagon, and it's the perfect event here on Friday. Rich, are you ready for this?
I am ready for this, and that's a rare privilege. It's like Tiger Woods letting someone use his 7-iron. It doesn't happen. That's my segue to Caddyshack.
Appreciate
by the way, guys.
That. The Murray Brothers Caddyshack in Rosemont, nice enough to provide the refreshments here. Andy Murray is the owner. Mike Avella is the general manager. And Andy, a long time no see. Somewhere along the line, I know we bumped into each other. I seem to bump into your brother Bill and Brian Doyle and your sister Nancy over the years more often. Where have you been exactly?
I was in New York for a long time. I was in California for a long time. Now I'm splitting my time between St. Augustine, Florida and Chicago.
And someone has talked you into the restaurant business.
I've been in the restaurant business since I was 11 years old. And
there you go.
So you got it. I'm a little bit crazy. You have to be crazy to be in the restaurant business.
Mike can vouch for that. He's the GM. And let's see, you guys opened up this year, correct?
No, last year.
Last
2018.
Year? And how's it been going so far?
Nothing but laughs.
And what's the featured menu item? If you're going to go to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack in Rosemont one time, what would be the item to order?
Definitely the hamburgers. We have just fabulous hamburgers. Probably the best hamburger in Rosemont, wouldn't you think, Andy?
I would definitely second that, and I'm very partial to our crab cakes myself.
Now, I've got a question for both Andy and Mike. I know it's a fun, loose atmosphere reflecting, you know, the fun of all the Murray siblings and Mike's fine work, but do you have a strict policy that if anybody launches into the Dalai Lama speech, they're thrown out of the restaurant?
You know, I've been with Billy. I've seen guys from kids from 8 and old men at 80 years old start doing lines from the movie, and he just sits there and smiles. And I saw baseball players, remember the All-Star game in Chicago, what was that, 80?
83
they played. And all these baseball players were coming up and doing lines from it.
Sure. It's incredible. And as you know, I mean, we've talked about this all over the years. I mean, the movie was kind of thrown together. You know, I mean, they were making it on the fly. We've talked, you know, we just talked to the late, great Harold Ramis about that and some of the other participants. And it was really just, well, we'll make it up as we go along. It's going to be loosely based on your guys' experiences, I think, right? You were all caddies.
We were all caddies. And
around here.
And, you know, we had to, the ones who went to Loyola, we had to help pay tuition.
Mm.
And back then it was a lot less than it is now.
Yeah. The Caddyshack restaurants are all over the country, correct?
They're just two. There's two. There's one in St. Augustine, Florida, and there's one here. We hope to have more in the Chicago area.
And as I'm sure, Andy Murray, you know, being around the restaurant biz for a while, and Mike Avella as the general manager, I'm sure you say this often, you can have a fun atmosphere and you can have celebrities hanging out, but if the food's not great, going to be in trouble.
Yeah, you
right?
get them once for the attraction of it, mm-hmm. and you got to get them back with the food and the drink.
Well, we're very lucky. We have a great culinary team, you know, Andy, of course, leading the charge on that, and the back of us culinary team, they just do a fantastic job, and they make us look great every day.
And what did you bring in here today exactly? Here.
Well, it's, you know, because of the marathon, we instead of carb loading, we're going to do sugar loading with drinks and dessert. Our dessert is our caramel mousse, which is just, it's silky, it's smooth, it's wonderful. It's my favorite dessert.
Right, let me get into now, this here.
Unfortunately, I'm one of those guys who I look at the label. God. I look at the label on a bottle of liquor, and I think I'm in Cleveland. So I'll let Rich do the alcohol testing. I'll just take a little hint.
Well, first of all, the caramel mousse is like the greatest thing I've ever had in my life. It's unbelievable because I'm a big caramel guy, and you don't get a lot of things, you know, caramel flavored. You know,
no, that's. Are you supposed to mix these three drinks? Because I'm drinking all three.
Put the drink down. We got another hour after this. Perfectly but look, the millennials will come. We got Kevin Lauren here. So
I like this one, the sweet one. I like this. What's this?
That is our 19th hole. It's made with our Murray Brothers Caddyshack vodka, which is made here in Illinois, in Wheeling.
Oh, wow.
And it's made, again, with the vodka, Aperol, peach schnapps, simple syrup, and some fresh-squeezed lemon juice.
The peach schnapps, yeah.
Yeah, this one here, I think, is lethal.
Now, what's nice about that is Lucille's old-fashioned. Lucille, of course, was Andy's mother. Hmm. She had 9 children, and she had to drink old-fashions all the time.
Can you imagine? It must have felt like 18 with them running around, too.
my mother, you know, she is a saint. There's
God
no
bless,
doubt about
God
that.
God bless.
But what's nice about the old-fashioned at the restaurant, it's on draft. So we make it, and we put it in the barrel, and then it comes right off the draft.
I'm going to have to bring Ro up to see you guys because that's his signature drink. That's one of his, you know, the old fashioned. He's a huge guy.
Yeah, my signature drinks, of course, the root beer float, sometimes known as the black cow, and the phosphate, also known as the egg cream. How's the dessert menu there at the Caddy Shack in Rosemont?
Our desserts are great. It's crazy. We got this waffle thing that's just, it's big. It's got nuts. It's got chocolate. It's got caramel. It's got ice cream. It's got whipped cream.
Yeah, this one you brought in looks pretty good. I'm going to taste it now.
That's fabulous. Caramel mousse.
And then we have one more drink here, too, right?
So that is our house pomegranate martini.
Pomegranate martini.
And what's special about this drink, as you all know, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. So we did partner with the Lynn Sage Foundation and with Chicago in Good Taste. And some of the proceeds that go to all the pomegranate martini sold at Caddyshack will go to the Lynn Sage Foundation.
Very nice. That's very cool that you guys are doing that. And that, by the way, is terrific. Bob, the pomegranate martinis had a hit single, I think, when you were back in the day spinning the records, right? With B-side.
Yeah, you're right absolutely there. Right.
They opened for Moby Grape at some point, right?
Caramel mousse here.
The caramel mousse is unbelievable.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Do you guys, tell me about the restaurant a little bit. Do you have outside seating? How big is the place? What's the deal?
It's total square footage is 8,500 square feet. No, we don't have any outside. We have a place. We haven't worked it out yet. But okay.
But it does seat about.
It's Rosemont. Let's just leave it at that, okay? You want to sit outside, you got to talk to a couple of people.
Not that you'd want to. Not that you want to sit outside today.
I know the person to talk to.
There's always somebody to talk to in Rosemont. There's a guy.
You know, the restaurant people I know hate Chicago weather people. Because they claim the weather men and women on TV scare people into not going out in the inclement weather. Like this tonight, it's cold. You know, today was great. Summer
it's
in the morning,
out there.
Fall in the middle of the day, winter tonight.
It's caramel mousse weather. Come on.
It is caramel mousse.
Yeah. Well, comfort food, right? Mm-hmm. We're craving that right now.
Absolutely. The chicken and waffles definitely is a comfort food. Andy mentioned the crab cake earlier. Our potato golf balls. We're talking about the golf balls.
We have these mashed potato golf balls that we have cheese fantastic. And bacon and a few other things I can't give away. And then we fry them, and we put them with a horseradish sauce. And they're just, it sounds simple, but they're just so.
Sounds fantastic.
Well, you've got a lot of competition out there in Rosemont, don't you?
Which actually,
in a way, is good, isn't it? It brings a lot of people out there.
It brings a lot of people out there. Mayor Brad Stevens is, he's on top of getting people out into Rosemont, and he does a very good job.
I'm told that if you mention that you heard Andy Murray and Mike Avella on the show here today on WGN on the Ro Khan show with Bob Surratt at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack in Rosemont, you will get a free pickle. Is that correct?
True?
Did I get the right information on that?
A free pickle and a free cherry.
Oh, wow. All right, people are heading out there right now.
I go a long way for a good
pickle.
I didn't realize
you were giving away the company.
He's like, wait a minute, she's pickle and cherry? How about and or a pickle? You know, interestingly, a lot of times if you mention that, you know, Roe sent me the classic, you know, right? Tell them Roe sent you. They'll charge you 10% extra for the trouble that's sure to ensue.
Any plans for more Caddyshack restaurants?
Yes, there are some in the work. There are plans in the work.
We're going to come downtown, around. Andy. You going to come downtown?
Trust me, we're looking downtown.
We'd love to have you. Although you're not, this is not far away, guys. Oh, I have to ask you guys too quickly. Are there Murray sibling related memorabilia? Do you have posters and stuff like
that?
Well,
we've got a lot of posters. You know, everybody's moving.
Mm-hmm.
Even Johnny's moving violations, which was just a one shot deal. But
yeah.
Joel's got these weird movies, The Hatchet. I didn't even know he was in it.
I don't know if Joel knew he was in it. He knew he showed up for filming. He got a per diem.
But God Bless America. It's kind of cool. A weird movie.
Murray Brothers Caddyshack in Rosemont, 9546 Balmoral Avenue out there in Rosemont. Thanks to Andy Murray and also Mike Avella, the general
Drinks
manager.
Drinks are great, guys. Thanks so much.
Everything is very good. I'm going to wait until 7 for most
good
of the
plan.
Alcohol because I'm not your Rich Roper, your newspaper man guy who can drink like crazy. You know, I'm
true.
You know,
part of the job.
I'm just a young disc jockey. I don't.
Well,
know
yeah, I'm Mike's driver, so I'm
good man.
So I'm drinking a lot.
Well, appreciate it, you guys.
Thanks,
best
guys.
To you. We'll see you out there in Rosemont at the Caddyshack restaurant, and let's find out if people are getting anywhere that they're supposed to be on time. We've got the traffic update here at 5:47, and then Rich reviews, among other things, the new Breaking Bad movie. Bob Surratt in charge of the radio station here until 7 o'clock. Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis back on Monday. Richard Roper is here to talk movies with us. And before we get to the new Breaking Bad film and also the Eddie Murphy movie, and what else was I going to ask you about? Oh, the Judy Garland.
Yeah, you were interested in Judy, which, you know, it's Renee Zellweger, and she's getting a lot of Oscar buzz.
Is that worth seeing?
You know, I was right on the fence on this one, Bob. It's always like the hardest review. I remember you used to talk to both the late Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert about that. The 4-star reviews and the 1-star reviews, you know what you want to say, and you can zip those reviews out. It's the 2.5-star reviews that, it's great to have a platform like this, you know, when I talk with Rowan Anna and today with you about this, where you can get, you know, dive a little deeper into it or write 1,000 words about it, because some parts of it I really admired. It's set in the winter of 68-69, Judy Garland, I think, was 46 years old. She was 6 months away from passing away. She had, you know, had this long, as you know, long life of addiction and alcohol abuse. And it's set in London, which is based on the true story where she got a gig, like a kind of what we call now, you know, they do the residence in Vegas, you know, where you're playing the same place night after night. And she really needed the money because she had not really been getting any work in the States. So all of that, the period piece stuff, is accurate, and Renee Zellweger is really good. But, Bob, I felt like the whole time she was doing a Judy Garland impersonation rather than a characterization, if that makes sense. Like, she got the nuances down, the physicality of Judy Garland.
But didn't become Judy Garland.
No, and, you know, and the other thing is she sings, which is, you know, which is a terrific thing to do, but maybe we can, if we can find that, can we pull up, do we have any clips from Judy? Maybe we can, if we had a time in the next minute or so. And she's really good, but Judy Garland had that amazing voice. She was 15, 16 years old when she was doing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, I recently saw The Wizard of Oz in a theater, and I had forgotten how iconic it was. But she looked a little old to me to play that particular role.
Well, she was, because Dorothy, I think, is supposed to be 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
And Judy was 15 or 16, and they actually sped up filming, and, you know, they talked about how they taped her breasts down and tried to make her look as young as possible, because she was. And especially when she was singing, she had this, you know, this gorgeous resonant voice. So when Renee Zellweger is performing, and they have complete set pieces with a band and, you know, dancers and, you know, the audience in these scenes set in this London theater. And she sounds like someone who's doing a really good Judy Garland impersonation. But you never forget. To me, I never forgot that it was Renee Zellweger. She kind of over-enunciates. You know, and there's so many biopics out there over the last, forever, But if I look at something like when Jamie Foxx played Ray Charles, it felt like he really became Ray Charles.
Yeah, he channeled Ray Charles.
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't. So that's why I gave it 2.5 stars.
All right, on to the Breaking Bad movie. That the word is that this is a continuation of the Breaking Bad series, and Aaron Paul says it answers the question everybody has asked him since the series ended: what happened to Jesse?
Yeah, before we'll do the full review after the 6 o'clock. News break, but okay. I will say this just in setting it up. We were talking a little bit before, but were you a Downton Abbey guy, Bob?
No.
Marianne, your wife, was she?
No.
I can't believe that because you know she's. You would have loved that.
I'm a bit of an Anglophile, but yeah. For some reason I didn't get into it.
Well, and it's a beautifully done show. You know, we were talking about how great Breaking Bad looked, and Downton Abbey is set in the 1910s and then the 1920s in this huge estate, you know, outside of London. And people ask me when the movie came out, what if I've never seen the show? Can I watch the movie and still enjoy it? And my answer to that was yes, because, look, if you saw the series, you're so excited to see, you know, your favorite characters. They all, almost all of them come back. And certain references and certain withering glances and, you know, little asides, you're only going to get that if you'd seen the series. But even if you never saw the show, you know, Downton Abbey, all you need to know is it's set in this, you know, amazing estate that, you know, has probably 350 rooms, and it features the upstairs and the downstairs, just like the show, upstairs, downstairs. So the high society and all their drama, and then down below in the kitchen and the servants' quarters, all that. So you get that right away. It's pretty easy to figure out who's the butler and who's Lady Crawley, you know. The ones who dress up in the white tux and the tie and tails for dinner, those are the rich people.
Yeah.
The ones bringing them their soup. Those are the servants.
Let me guess. Uh-huh.
So, you know, you really could enjoy it. I actually saw it with some people that were huge fans and then people that were seen one or two episodes. I will say this about El Camino, the Breaking Bad sequel, if you will. If you didn't see the show, if you haven't seen the show, it's going to be like watching something in Portuguese. You're just not going to get it. It's all about having seen not just the series once in a while, but having seen the entire show. You'll get certain things. I mean, any movie, you know, any sequel, you could watch any Star Wars and get some of the stuff that's going on within the self-contained story. But what this is definitely made for the Breaking Bad fans. And one of the cool things they do, it's on Netflix, by the way. It's not playing in the theaters. It just dropped on Netflix. Debuted at 2 o'clock in the morning, so that's why one of my eyes is completely closed right now. Because I watched it in real time and then wrote my review for this.
It's part of your job.
It's part of the job. Yeah. Part of the gig. Nobody wants to hear the guy complaining about that. So you can watch this if you have Netflix. It's available now. And one of the cool things is you have an option at the beginning. You can watch a 5-minute recap of the series or go straight into it. But even if you've seen every episode, you got to watch the recap because it gets you right there and it takes you right up to the ending of Breaking Bad. The sequel picks up that exact moment. It's not 10 years later. He's not on an island like in Castaway or something.
Will you have clips when we come back?
I think we're going to clip.
Okay.
We have a clip.
Stand by for that. More on the Breaking Bad movie. Also, I want to ask you about this Eddie Murphy movie.
My name is Dolomite.
Well,
we will not be playing a clip for that because this is family radio, and I couldn't find 12 seconds to string together.
And there's some documentaries that seem to have disappeared too quickly, and they sounded great. More on that with Rich Roper coming up after the news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Oh. We're not taking a break right now? Oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess our stations across the country have decided to stay with us for another minute.
I was told we had right up to 559, 50-something or that.
I had something else in my script here.
See, this is the thing about the Rokan show with Anna DeVlantes. When people come to the studio a lot of times, and we do a lot of remotes, you know, we were at United Center yesterday, but especially when you come to the studio, people see what Rokan does. Because he runs his own board. Not everybody in radio does that anymore. I mean, we got great producers and technical producers. But Bro, you know, is the traffic cop for all of this, so to speak. And it's unbelievable what he has to do. As you're looking at me right now saying, you know, I remember when I used to just have to say that was the strawberry alarm clock. And coming up next, the Lemon Pipers.
I would react to what you're saying. I'm too busy pressing buttons over here.
It's no small task to keep the plane up in the air. Thank you for that deep dive there. Are we okay? A little turbulence there, ladies and gentlemen.
Since we have a moment here, why do these documentaries? I was really interested in this Mike Wallace documentary that was out.
Yeah, it's
terrific.
There's
a Roy Cohn documentary that's out.
Roy Cohn?
Why did they disappear so quickly?
You know, with rare exceptions, you'll get the breakout documentaries, you know, going back to the movies. movies like Hoop Dreams or, you know, some of the Michael Moore films that people go to theaters to see. Documentaries are really the home viewing. I mean, it's not to say you shouldn't see them in theaters, but they usually get very limited theatrical releases. The great thing about these documentaries you mentioned is they're available on one platform or another. You know, sometimes, yeah, you have to have a pay service like Amazon Prime or HBO Go or, of course, Netflix, but
How soon after the theater showing?
Usually right when it comes out. So all the movies you mentioned are available right now for home video viewing.
All right.
Both really good. The Roy Cohn and the Mike Wallace doc.
Got my weekend planned.
There you go.
More movie stuff from Rich Rober coming up right after the news. Kim tells us what's happening next. El Camino is the new Breaking Bad movie that picks up after Jesse escaped from that bloody massacre that left Walter dead. Rich Rober is here. He's seen it and tells us about it now.
You know, Bob, I was just hearing that one of the great, what is that, a 12-second theme song, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking the great moments in vinyl. They could do that maybe at some point. Just to, you know, they're going to be doing Stevie Wonder, which is amazing. You know, wait till you hear these guys and gals are amazing, Bob. But I could see them easily pulling that off. Like, you know, just hey, thanks, ladies and gentlemen. We were going to do the entire Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon. We're just going to do the Breaking Bad theme.
It's so recognizable. It's kind of the sound on Seinfeld. Just the little sound.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. So this is Netflix, right?
Netflix original movie, El Camino. It's the sequel of sorts to Breaking Bad. And as we were mentioning a little bit earlier, if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, I don't see you getting a ton out of this. This is the Jesse Pinkman story. Spoiler alert, since the series ended in 2013, the great Bryan Cranston as Walter White. The series finale was this, you know, bloody shootout in which he took down all these white supremacist terrorists, basically, but also met his final end. His, you know, Walter White, who was dying of cancer on the show. And some people, you know, to this day theorize, he might not have been dead after he was shot 157 times. He's dead, okay? And he's gone. And as you recall, Jesse Pinkman, who was Walter White's high school student and then his partner in cooking meth and then got involved in even darker crimes than that. And they had this very conflicted, you know, father-son relationship. Sometimes hated each other, often saved each other's lives. It ended with him busting out of the joint where the shootout had occurred. He was the only one who survived. He was in a state of hysteria. He had been tortured and imprisoned for months on end. But had survived, and he was in the stolen El Camino, and he was heading off. The movie El Camino picks up at that exact moment. It's not 6 months later. It's not 10 months later. It's right then. You're right in the car with him, and it tells us now about his desperate struggle to survive, because obviously police are looking for him as a person of interest. There are other associates of those bad guys who probably want him dead. He's trying to find some money that's been hidden so he can get out of town. And all of this is going on in the Albuquerque of, you know, basically present day, right after the events of the Breaking Bad finale. But we also get flashbacks, and that's how you can bring back certain characters who were killed off, as they did, of course, with Better Call Saul, which is the prequel series with the great Chicago area, Bob Odenkirk, the great Bob Odenkirk as Saul. So one of the main characters on Better Call Saul is Jonathan Banks plays Mike Ehrmantraut. He was the former cop who became kind of the fixer for Saul and then got involved with Walter White. So we got a clip here. This is Jesse Pinkman and Mike. This is a kind of a moment maybe 2 or 3 years in the past, and they're talking a little bit about Walter White, but this is just Jesse and Mike.
Here it is.
You know he's not going to be happy.
No, I suspect he won't. Only you can decide what's best for you, Jesse. Not him, not me.
I'm out. So what are you going to do with all that money?
Same thing I do with all the other money. How about you, teenage retiree? You'll be living the dream. Not sure I should stick around town. That's a start. Nothing really keeping me here. Where'd you go? You or me? Doesn't matter. I'm not you.
Seriously, come on. Like, if you were my age, play along. Make some conversation.
Alaska.
Yeah?
Yeah, if I were your age, starting fresh, Alaska is the last frontier.
Is there any difference these days in a movie made for Netflix that ultimately goes to one of those services as opposed to a big screen theater?
I don't think so. It's a great question. I think some movies, when they know they're making them for Netflix and there's a certain budgetary thing, I think they do take that into consideration. Like, I know I've talked to some directors who say if they know it's never going to play on the big screen, there might be a certain shot that they'll do a different way, maybe more close-ups and medium shots, maybe less type of scenes where you're going to lose something on the small screen. But by and large, these are movies, and a lot of these Netflix movies, this one is going straight to Netflix. So for people who are wondering, it's available right now. If you're a Netflix subscriber, it'll be right there in the What's New or What's Trending, and it's called El Camino. 3.5 stars is my ranking for that out of 4, Bob.
Pretty good.
But some of the other ones, you know, like when The Irishman, of course, the Scorsese film, it's a Netflix original, but it's going to play. It opens November 1st here in Chicago. Then it'll be on Netflix about 3 weeks later. That was shot like a Martin Scorsese film. He didn't compromise in any way, shape, or form. He shot it just like, because it is going to be a theatrical release.
And before you go, what is the deal on this Eddie Murphy movie?
Dolomite Is My Name. I love this movie, Bob. So Rudy Ray Moore was this in the 60s and 70s. He had tried to be a singer, tried to be a comic. He had tried to be a record producer. And he's 45-ish and had never really caught on. He was working as a record store manager. And he came up with this character of Dolomite, who was based on decades of black folklore, storytelling in rhyme, and very raunchy stuff. And he was kind of dressed like a pimp, and he took Dolomite on the road, and he became so popular, he made a movie. In fact, he made, I think, 7 Dolomite movies. They used to call them blaxploitation films of the 70s. And this is the story of him trying to make that first movie, even though he had never made a movie, his friends had never made a movie, he had no idea what he was doing. They put it all together for like $60,000. But it's just a great Rocky underdog story. You know, it's about a guy overcoming all the odds, and it's really funny, which you'd expect from an Eddie Murphy movie, but there's also some pretty serious dramatic moments as well. And it is a full performance by Eddie Murphy. It's the comeback that we've been waiting for.
Did I read something about some issue with the distribution of this
film? Yeah, that's a Netflix issue, and I don't know all the particulars, but you know, the theater owners are not, by and large, thrilled with Netflix because it's kind of taken over the world, and these movies, a lot of them are not getting a theatrical platform, or they're just getting these limited 2 or 3 week runs. The theater owners make more money as the weeks go by. The first couple of weeks, almost all the money goes back to the studios. As the weeks go on, they get a bigger percentage of the box office. So they love the movies that have legs, you know, like A Star Is Born last year played for 3 or 4 months in theaters because, you know, kept getting great word of mouth. So when these movies are only going to play for a few weeks before getting theatrical releases, a lot of the theater owners are saying, well, then you're not going to play it. So the downtown theaters, unfortunately, you can't find Dolomite Is My Name in the downtown area.
Rich Roper, good to be with you,
Bob,
as
Surratt.
Always. Yes, I am the voice Indeed. Of the famous coal mine at the Museum of Science and
That's
Industry,
true.
And I did not even ask them to rename it the Bob Surratt Museum,
That's nice
just,
of you.
Just for the record. You are more familiar than I am with this group that's coming in, these musicians who are going to play live, and we'll talk to mm-hmm. them about
They're
this.
Great.
It's Great Moments in Vinyl coming up in just a moment here, and I understand that they are not to be believed, the material they do.
Our good friend William Lindsay Cochran, he's the bass player. He also tells the stories about these various songs. You know him as Bill Cochran, a very well-known, successful radio host here
yep.
in Chicago, but a very talented musician. He puts together these various iterations of kind of a rotating band of amazing musicians and singers, and they do these beautiful tributes to various, usually the full album, and then and William tells stories in between. And they're going to do this time, it's going to be at Martyrs, and you'll be able to talk to them all about this, but they're going to be playing from one of my favorite albums of all time, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. We're going to hear some cuts from that amazing album.
It's a classic. Okay.
Great Moments in Vinyl.
Coming up next, right here on the Roll Con program, right now, coming up on 617, let's find out where the brake lights are shining red. Here's Lauren's traffic update. We are back on the Roll Con show. Bob Surratt with you, and thanks for joining us. It's music time. Ro does this every Friday, and he is sort of become the Dick Clark of the radio station on Fridays with his music segments here. And we're going to introduce you to a band that you need to know about, Great Moments in Vinyl. And they're going to play some Stevie Wonder music. But let's get a little history of the band first and welcome Bill Cochran to the show. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Bob, thanks very much.
Talk to us about the group, what you guys have done, and why everybody's talking about you.
How much time do I have? What do I need to fill here?
You got enough.
This, you know, I'm a radio guy. So I started working at XRT years ago,
Worked at WNUA for a while. Went back to XRT. Now I'm at MeTV FM over at 87.7. And what has driven my career has been this love of music. I've always played instruments on the side, but never seriously. But I've always wanted to do that. And I started taking lessons at the Old Town School of Music. And I saw these different classes that, you know, it's not just learning how to play banjo and dulcimer there. It's like they have a Rolling Stones class, and they have a Clash class, and they have a Stevie Wonder class. And I saw all these instructors just killing it with the music that they were leading. You know, the bands, well, you know, we were learning how to play, but the people leading the class were really, really good. And I thought, you know, I could get some of these people to lead a band, put a band together, and I could do my radio DJ thing and tell stories about the songs.
How about that?
And that's how it started 6.5 years ago. It started off with a Bruce Springsteen show, did his second and third albums. And since then, it's been about 70, 80 different shows with 40 or 50 different albums. And the latest, Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life.
I know you've done Beatles, Tom Petty, Moody Blues. Do you call yourselves a tribute band?
Well, you know, here's the thing. There almost is no band. It's just me. And then I find the right musicians to do the show. For example, when we did the Paul Simon Graceland show, the vocalists who were in the next studio over stepped in and sang the Ladysmith Black Mambazo parts. And I had a keyboard player who had a great-sounding Paul Simon voice. And then there's all this fretless bass stuff that goes on the Graceland album. So I stepped away from the bass and hired a guy by the name of Kevin Campbell, who was just dynamite on it. And then I have my drummer today, Jonathan Reed, who's played in multiple shows. He was in the Prince set. He was in Elton John, many other things. The guitarist I have with me today, Bill Grady, he can't make our show because he's got another gig that night. But he was my Jimi Hendrix and my Duane Allman and my David Gilmour, you know, from Pink Floyd. So I find the right people for the show. And what that does is it gets the band excited about it. It's a chance to play something they've wanted to play all their lives. And these guys that I work with, they're professionals in the sense that they have to be, you know, doing wedding shows and things like that. You know, there's only so many times you can play Proud Mary and put your heart and soul into it.
Yeah.
So I give them a chance to play things and stretch out and do stuff that they wouldn't get a chance to do normally. And that's why they love it, too.
Your band, Great Moments in Vinyl, plays Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life, coming up on the 26th. That's a Saturday, 9 p.m. at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln in Chicago. We're going to get a preview now. And take it away. Let's hear a little bit of that. And quickly, before you start, though, Bill, what's the hardest thing about doing Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life?
Well, as I was saying before, and this is not a cop-out, I find the right musicians. So it's not hard at all. I mean, these guys step in, and they just they blow me away at rehearsal. When I sit down and hear what these people can play, I've got on keyboards, I totally forgot, Clarence Williams Jr., a gentleman was recommended to me because I, you know, I have connections in the world of smooth jazz. And I asked some of those musicians in town, said, can you recommend a guy who knows funk and gospel and R&B and jazz? And he came my way. And,
right.
Oh, my gosh, you're going to hear it.
Crank up the radio. We'll get a little sample now. Thanks to Ernie and Krista from our staff for setting this up. And then a great Stevie Wonder story, a personal encounter we need to share. But first, let's go to the music here. Great Moments in Vinyl is the group. Bill Cochran and Company, take it away with Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. Love today.
before it's 1-2-5. If you let it destroy everybody, we all must take precautionary measures. If love and peace you treasure, then you hear me when I say, oh, that love is
Great sound from the band Great Moments and Vinyl, doing Stevie Wonder's songs in the key of life. More to come with them, and what's Stevie Wonder like backstage? We'll find out right after the news update. I know that Rokan does the live music every Friday, even though some people on Ro's staff have tried to convince me that they only did it because I was here today. But I appreciate the thought anyway. Appreciate the idea. We're listening to a band called Great Moments in Vinyl. And Bill Cochran is here with the band. And they are unbelievable. They have done Prince. They have done, let's see, what else? Led Zeppelin, Pearl Jam. And Bill, when I say you guys have done these bands, you try to recreate the sound of the record exactly. Is that the idea?
Well, no, we try not to be slavishly imitative. Here's a problem. I won't name the band, but I've seen another tribute band perform in the Chicago area, and when they try to do the album note perfect, You're not hearing the music. You're listening to whether they get it right or not. So what we try to do is honor the music, but also bring some of our own energy, some of our own fun to it, and make it a live thing again. So once again, you're not, you know, if you want to hear the album, stay home. But if you want to hear a band actually play it live and bring some, not trying to do new stuff with it, but just that live element. And we just pick an album and go for it, all the tracks.
And if you want to hear great moments in vinyl playing Stevie Wonder's songs in the key of life, you can head over to Martyrs on Saturday, October 26th. They're up at 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. What kind of research do you do? How do you prepare for doing, for example, Stevie Wonder's songs in the key of life, Bill?
Let me just say that if Google were not in existence, I don't know how I would do this sort of thing. You know,
I don't know how we'd live.
Yeah, I dig in. You know, I'm still doing my research on Stevie, but I found a great little interview that he did with Oprah. There's some interviews that I found overseas, like the Guardian newspaper interviewer there asked him once whether a movie version of his life would be a drama, a comedy, or a tragedy. He says, all of the above. The interviewer went on to say, do you ever consider being blind as a disadvantage? And he said, I never thought of it that way. I am what I am. I love me. And I don't mean that egotistically. I love that God has allowed me to take whatever it was that I had and to make something of it. So I try to find things that the artists say about themselves and their music and that their fans and supporters say about them and weave that into all the songs.
You're going to play for us again, but before you do, we want to hear the Bob Surratt Stevie Wonder backstage story.
You've met him, right?
Yeah. Most recently, well, actually, it's been quite a few years now because I was working at Channel 5, and here is the story I share with people. He's backstage after the show, and they've set up a keyboard for him, and he's outside the trailers, and he's just playing music all the time as he talks to people. And then when we were introduced, he sang the WLS jingle.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and apparently Stevie Wonder knows all the jingles of all the radio stations across the country. And, of course, he has that locked in, that genius brain of his. He's really something else. And I think you appreciate him the most when you see him perform live. We know he's a genius, but when you see him creating that music live, it really is something special. And you're going to do some live music for us again right now. Why don't you introduce the band, introduce the members of the group, and then we'll get right into Isn't She Lovely?
Sure. On the vocals, we have members of the Mosaic Soul Vocal Ensemble, a performing group here in Chicago that consists of Philip Armstrong, Eric Trevon, and Monique Golding.
Hi.
And then Bill Grady in the studio with me is playing guitar, but he's also singing and subbing for Bob Kessler, a WGN news person who's going to be playing harmonica with us when we do the show. But Bill will pick up his honer and do a little playing. Clarence Williams Jr. is on the keyboards. First time playing with us, and we are all blown away by this gentleman. I mean, what he brings to it, just like, oh, my
Absolutely.
Gosh. Jonathan Reed on the drums. And William Lindsay Cochran. I go by the name Lindsay when I'm in music circles because, Bob, when I was leaving WNUA and I started hanging out with rock musicians, I just thought, you know, people are not going to be impressed with my smooth jazz background. So I need to go incognito into this world. So William Lindsay Cochran is how I call myself these days.
And we're about to hear everybody. And this is the ultimate compliment for you guys because when we were listening to the Love's in Need of Love Today song that you did before the news, it sounded like a record. It really did. It's that good. Great moments in vinyl. I will step aside and let you guys have the bandstand here, and we'll listen to the group doing more of Stevie Wonder's songs in the key of life. Take it away.
Heaven blessed. I can't believe what
That's Great Moments in Vinyl, playing Stevie Wonder's Isn't She Lovely from Songs in the Key of Life. And you can hear them live, as we are hearing them live on WGN this evening. They will be appearing, let's see, where is it? October 26th, that's a Saturday, at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. And Bill, you guys, I know you have one more song coming up for us, but it's awesome hearing you live. It's a real treat. Now, will you play the Stevie Wonder show and then move on right away to another artist not long after that?
You know, we always have things in the works. We did about, this project did about 10 or 12 shows over the last 5 or 6 months. We did Paul Simon's Graceland. We did a Beatles with Strings at City Winery. We did a Woodstock tribute. We did a Kate Bush tribute. We had a Prince show that we reprised. Elton John, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. What am I leaving out? Who? We did the Who's Next and Live at Leeds. So we're always trying something new. What we have in the works next, Phil Angotti, a local musician, and I have been talking about doing a Kinks tribute. And then Bill Grady, guitarist for today, came to me and said, what about Derek and the Dominoes? So we're going to bring in Scott Tipping, who plays with us on guitar on many many occasions, and put a Layla set together. But we're going to trace the path of both Dwayne Allman and Eric Clapton through their bands that preceded Derek and the Dominoes. And as always, I tell stories about how the musicians put the whole thing together. So it puts it all in a context. It's not just a tribute band doing a random assortment of tunes. It's interesting. It's fun.
And is it your experience that the live music scene in Chicago is getting better? It seems that there are more venues now, smaller venues perhaps, but there's still more live music in more places around than ever. Have you found that to be the case?
Boy, I'm a newcomer to the scene. I defer to one of my other gentlemen in the room here. Somebody... Bill, Jonathan, nod. How do you answer that question?
Are they nodding in agreement, or are they saying, what's he talking about?
Yeah, they said there's more to play, more places to play.
Great. All right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll get your favorite Stevie Wonder story when we come back, and also one more song from Great Moments in Vinyl here on The Rocon Spectacular on WGN. Let's check on the traffic first. Here's Lauren. Getting any better out there? And it's one more music piece here, live from the group Great Moments in Vinyl. And we'll let Bill Cochran play us out here. And Bill, before you do the next song, which is As from Songs in the Key of Life, in your research and your prep for this, you mentioned a couple of Stevie Wonder stories, a couple of tidbits you uncovered. What was the most impressive for you? Let me turn on your microphone here. There you go. Go ahead.
I haven't worked this into an actual story, but it's what other people have said about Stevie, and some pretty impressive quotes here. He is the best example of what a human being can be. Mm. Herbie Hancock said that. Can anyone imagine what the last 25 years of American popular music would be without Stevie Wonder? He is the composer of his generation. That came from Paul Simon. If anybody can be called a genius, Stevie Wonder can be. Bob Dylan.
Yeah. And he's still going strong, isn't he?
Absolutely. He is profoundly creative as a person and profound as a human being, too. Quincy Jones had that to say. He's the most influential musician alive, Elvis Costello said. His message, I think, is about love. And in the world we live in today, that message does shine through. That's what Elton John had to say. George Jackson, the former president of Motown Records, had this to say about Stevie. His ability to inspire and extract all that's good out of a crazy world is just amazing.
Yeah, so as the story goes, when little Stevie Wonder got to Motown Studios, he was playing the drums and he was playing the piano, and he and the artists there were just looked at him and thought, What is with this guy? It's unbelievable.
What Stevie did, he was part of Motown, which was a hit single factory. And I don't mean that to denigrate them, but I mean that's what their mission was to create hit singles. Stevie wanted to be an artist. He wanted to create albums. He wanted to create moods and set the stage for an entire vinyl LP, and that's what he did.
All right, we will wrap things up after one more song live from Great Moments in Vinyl. Something else from Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. This is As. Take it away, Bill and company.
Two, one, two, three. Do, 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 do. Do, Around the sun, the earth knows she's revolving. And the rosebuds know to bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always.
As no one can reveal the mystery of tomorrow, but in passing we'll grow older every day. Just as all is born is new, you know what I say is true, that I'll be loving you always.
Until the rainbow burns the stars out in the sky.
Always.
Until the ocean covers every mountain high.
Always.
Until the dolphin flies and parrots live at sea.
Oh.
Until the dream of happy life becomes a dream.
Do you know that true love asks for nothing? Her acceptance is the way we pay. Do you know that life is giving love a guarantee to last forever, another day?
Just as time knew to move on since the beginning.
Same mode.
And the seasons know exactly when to change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just as kindness knows no shame, know through all your joy and pain that I'll be loving you always.
As today I know I'm living, but tomorrow could make me the past, but that I mustn't fear, for I know deep in my mind the love of me I left behind, cause I'll be loving you always.
Until the day is night and night becomes the day.
Always.
Until the trees and seasons stop and fly away.
Always.
Until the day that ends, yeah, our fate, our fate is for.
Always.
Until the day that is the day we are no more.
Did you know you love?
Until the day the answer's turning right to left.
Always.
Until the earth is more, the sun denies itself.
I'll be loving you.
Until the mother nature says the work is through.
Always.
Until the day that you are me and I am you.
Always.
Until the rainbow burns the stars out of the sky.
Yeah.
Until the ocean covers every mountain high.
Always.
Live from Studio 2 in the Rokan building, high atop Chicago. Great Moments in Vinyl, playing some Stevie Wonder, a little preview of the show they're going to be doing in Chicago coming up on October 26th. That's a Saturday night at 9 at Martyrs, and they'll be performing Stevie Wonder. Very impressive. Our thanks to Bill Cochran and company for giving us a little preview of that show. And our thanks to Ro for letting me in here. He'll be back with Anna on Monday afternoon. And Jeff and Brian, we're teaching an old dog new tricks today. Thanks for the help. I got the hang of it now. And, of course, it's time to say goodbye. That's how it goes. Justin Kaufman is coming up next. Actually, the reason I can't come back at all next week is it's going to be too tempting. I alluded to this earlier. Trouble for all of the workers here at WGN who are on diets because Lou Malnati's is going to open a pizza place right across the street in the Wrigley building. So good luck with that. And we'll see you down the road. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.